Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. The big event this week is the long-awaited start of Fed rate cuts, which are almost certain to happen, with the question of how large it will be, 25 or 50 basis points. Joining us today for the CIO strategy snapshot to discuss what the Fed will do, how the markets could react, and why focusing on the size of the cuts is not the most important issue is Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. So, Jason, thank you for joining us to begin another trading week. It will be very busy with a lot of focus on the outcome of the Fed meeting on Wednesday. So thank you for dropping by. Looking forward to our conversation.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. It's good to be here for another week, and certainly is a big, somewhat monumental week, as you alluded to.
So, Jason, let's begin with that very topic. What should we expect from the Fed this week?
Well, at this moment, it does actually look like it's a bit of a toss-up between a 25 basis point cut and a 50 basis point cut. It seemed to be kind of settled in terms of this debate or discussion, or largely settled, after we got the August CPI data last Wednesday. It came in, you know, it was a little bit disappointing, came in slightly on the hot side. And so it seemed like that would be enough for the Fed to say, well, let's just do 25 basis points. And the market pricing was sort of consistent with that. It was less than 20% chance of a 50 basis point, you know, hike this week. And then on Thursday afternoon, there were, you know, a couple of media reports, one in the Wall Street Journal, another in the Financial Times, written to suggest that it's still sort of a toss-up. You know, 50 basis point cut is still very much on the table. You know, one of the articles written for the Wall Street Journal is by a reporter, Nick Timiraos, who's, some people might think he's a bit of a Fed whisperer, meaning when the Fed wants to get something out of the media, he's the person that they call. So there's a little more weight put to sort of articles written by him. There's also comments from a former advisor to Jay Powell, who was sort of advocating for a 50 basis point cut. And again, some people might infer that this is a back channel for Powell, for the Fed to kind of get out guidance that, you know, it's not a done deal. It's not 25. It could very much still be 50. So by the end of Friday, the market was now literally a 50-50 kind of, you know, pricing of the probability. And as of this morning, of Monday morning, there were additional kind of reports over the weekend that have now, consistent with this, have now kind of tipped the scales to be, you know, favoring actually 50 basis point cut versus 25. It's always hard to know how much stock to put into this. You know, everyone is looking for some sort of informational edge. The last guidance the Fed was giving before the blackout period began on the Friday was, you know, two Fed governors who kind of alluded to like 25 is where we're going to start, and then we're open to doing 50 more. So it's a little bit kind of a question, like, why would they be then trying to give additional information or guidance and saying 50 actually could be on the table when there hasn't been a lot of information since the blackout period ended, and what the data we got on inflation suggests is actually would argue more for 25. So we'll see what exactly happens on Wednesday. You know, our formal official call has been for 50 basis points, but that was done earlier this summer, and subsequent data, at least on the economic front, would suggest that 25 was the more likely outcome prior to some of this attempted communication. I think for us, the key point is that between now and year end, we still expect 100 basis points of cuts. So the Fed might start at 25. But the economic data, the labor market will cool enough to warrant a sort of more, you know, kind of rapid acceleration. You know, if they end up only doing 25 basis point cut, there'll be a lot of focus. In fact, there'll be focus either way on what is the Fed guidance going forward in terms of the dot plot, which implies how many cuts they will do this year. But in particular, next year, there'll be a lot of focus. There'll be a lot of focus on the guidance from Powell either way during this press conference in terms of what is the Fed thinking, what is its sort of reaction function to incoming data. You know, he's often, and other Fed officials have often made the comment that, you know, they are data dependent, which is true, but I think there's certainly a desire among investors to hear, you know, something more, you know, specific or quantitative in terms of what levels would trigger what sort of actions. We may or may not get that. What we could just get is language and communication reiterating that the Fed is going to be aggressive if necessary on any sort of labor market weakness. They don't want to see further slowing down there. So it could be a dovish 25 basis point cut, but given the stakes have been raised just in the past, you know, 4 days in terms of what the Fed could do, there is certainly scope for a bit of disappointment if they only do 25. So I'd say toss up for this week. Going forward, I think we still feel comfortable for 100 basis points. And really the key, one of the keys will be like, what is the guidance for next year? Because the market is pricing pretty aggressive cuts through the end of next year, such that the Fed funds rate is below 3%, around 2.9 by the end of next year. that's a pretty bearish outcome in terms of how the economy is doing. So again, what the Fed says for next year, how quickly they want to get to something closer to neutral, those will be as important for what the Fed market takes away as whether they do 25 or 50.
Well, Jason, thank you for sharing with us your expectations. I want to highlight as well on Wednesday, our listeners, our clients can look forward to a CIO First Take podcast where you and our colleague Brian Rose, Senior Economist Americas, will break down the outcome of the Fed statement and press conference on Wednesday afternoon. So that's coming out a bit later this week. Now, getting back to our conversation for today in your most recent blog, that title, The Most Important Question, you argue that it's not how much will the Fed cut this week or how will the market react to the decision. So if it's not those, what is the most important question in your view?
Well, those are certainly important questions. But if we take not just this week, but if we think about the outlook between now and sort of year end or into early 2025, to me, the most important kind of question that's going to drive markets, risk assets, and particularly, you know, equities, credit, it's not so much how much the Fed does, but whether the market perceives the Fed as being essentially behind the curve or ahead of the curve. And are these cuts, if they do 50 basis points now or at some point later, are they deemed effective insurance, you know, for a soft landing, kind of basically kind of guaranteeing or as close to guaranteeing as you can get, thereby extending the economic expansion? That ultimately kind of matters more than the amount of cuts. In some way, this is another way of saying, you know, will investors think the Fed is ahead of the curve and proactively exercising its sort of so-called put, which, you know, kind of supports the market? You know, already I'd say, yeah, throughout the summer, this is the question that investors have been implicitly asking, and they've been certainly hoping for it all summer long. And the reason why you would want to, you know, kind of ask, is the Fed ahead of the curve, is that ultimately the combination of sort of preemptive, I call them insurance Fed rate cuts to ensure the soft landing, growth that is around sort of a 2% trend, give or take a little bit, and steady disinflation. Those three factors, that's a very supportive macro environment for risk assets. Just think about where we were in early July. We got a June payrolls report that exceeded expectations. At the time, it was 205,000 jobs created in June. That has been revised lower, but at the time, that was, you know, what investors knew. The June inflation data that came out about a week later after that was below expectations. And at that point in time, the markets that were waffling on whether the Fed would cut in September now move to more than 100% chance of a, you know, rate cut starting in September at a time when the economy and growth still looked like reasonably solid. So it was those conditions at that time that looked like you could have a proactive Fed willing to cut, preserving the soft landing. That was a main factor contributing to the S&P 500 hitting an all-time high in July 16th, given those conditions looked in place. We've had subsequent corrections in the S&P, certainly from late July, but into early August, there was nearly a 10% pullback. A tepid payrolls report for July was one of the big factors that caused that pullback, you know, right at the beginning of August. Similar, you know, just over a week ago, we got August payrolls report that were a little bit on the disappointed side. The market sold off quite a bit. That was another factor that we've seen these kind of pullbacks. Due to tepid labor market data, kind of fueling kind of concerns about how resilient is growth? How much could the economy slow? Could it slow more rapidly than investors are assuming? I'd note that in both cases, we saw the markets rally almost back to the all-time high both in July or in August, and then just as of last Friday, we're less than 1% from the all-time high. In the case of August, it was subsequent economic data that showed growth is actually holding up well, that again sort of reaffirmed that maybe growth isn't slowing as much as investors feared after the labor market report. Then last week, it was also on Friday, these reports that perhaps the Fed could do 50, that was also a catalyst to get to kind of the, you know, equity markets to kind of rebalance. In particular, you know, to kind of feed this narrative or this kind of view that the markets are really focused on implicitly this Goldilocks kind of soft landing kind of scenario of preemptive Fed rate cuts, is look at the performance of small cap stocks that are going to be more economically sensitive and really would benefit even more so than large from an extended economic expansion. They rallied strongly in September in July when that became apparent. They actually outperformed. The Russell 2000 outperformed the S&P 13 percentage points in less than 3 weeks on that rotation. This past Friday, the small cap index was up 2.5% after this report of a more aggressive Fed cut. The S&P was up 50 basis points. So again, you know, decent outperformance. So I also view that as a proxy for, is the market thinking we could go back to these kind of Goldilocks the conditions? And it's a small move on Friday, but that to me is ultimately the question. Is not so much, is the Fed going to cut 50-25, but is it cutting enough to preserve the soft land and extend the economic cycle? And that is, you know, that is kind of the key question. And so the amount of cuts is all relative to what is necessary to preserve that.
So then, Jason, how does the market outlook hinge on what the Fed will do this week?
Well, it's really going to kind of hinge on whether the investors, you know, think is the Fed ahead of the curve with insurance cuts and therefore expansion. And a 50 basis point cut would do that. It will likely continue the momentum. And I think, you know, this morning we're seeing, at least overseas, sort of that momentum at least continue a little bit. A 25 basis point cut this week that delays that confidence boost in terms of this extended expansion, that could certainly trigger a risk pullback. Rates could back up. You could see sort of tightening of financial conditions. And that would be the reaction, you know, kind of this week in a very short-term perspective. If the Fed only does 25, but it gives dovish guidance of being very aggressive in terms of addressing any slowdown in the economy, whether that's apparent through the dot plot or Powell's comments in the press conference, you know, either one could do it. That could sort of push back against that to some extent, although, you know, cuts are better than words at this point in time. So that's the Fed actions will really kind of, you know, drive the outlook this week and what happens. But ultimately, upcoming other economic data, specifically labor market data, is equally important for determining whether, you know, the Fed is viewed as behind the curve or not. So, for example, in just over, you know, 2 weeks after the Fed meeting on Friday, October 4th, the September payrolls report will come out. The past two have been disappointing. If this one happens to exceed to the upside and we get, say, August numbers are revised higher, which has been the very typical pattern for the past decade, suddenly we could be back in a situation where our job growth looks stable and now the Fed is actually cutting rates. We're only 4 weeks away from another cut and sort of talk of Goldilocks could resume. So that's a big if for those things to happen. But my point being is that, you know, the market will perceive the Fed as being behind the curve only if the economy really is slowing. If the growth isn't slowing, well, now you have a Fed that looks like it's actually more in the camp of cutting sort of, you know, proactively. In terms of the economic data itself, I mean, given, you know, what we can see from high frequency data, such as the weekly initial jobless claims, these weekly data on retail sales, there's not a lot of indication of the economy slowing down very much. And certainly for Q3 economic data, the Atlanta Fed tracking estimate is still at 2.5%. The Bloomberg consensus forecast is 2.3%. So not a lot of slowing down if that is still the case as we move 3 or 4 weeks ahead and the Fed is cutting rates. You know, the outlook could then sort of turn slightly more positive in a relatively short order. Not saying it will. There could be disappointment of September job payments or job growth, in which case now we're back to the very much the situation where the market's going to perceive the Fed is behind the curve and has a lot of work to do to kind of catch up, which it could, but that would certainly almost a fork in the road will not come so much this week, but maybe more so on October 4th.
So, Jason, as we begin to close out, giving your expectations for the Fed, the economy, and what investors are focused on, what is your market outlook?
Well, just sort of taking all these things I've discussed, you know, we think about the context that's been going on in the markets, at least the narrative for the past few weeks as we started, you know, post-Labor Day going into the fall. There's a lot of talk about these growth concerns as the economy is slowing down. We have this uncertainty about the election that's going to be an overhang for, you know, roughly 7 more weeks. It's sort of known, well documented, that September, October tend to be poor months, relatively poor months for the equity market, so sort of poor seasonals. And obviously the question about the Fed and whether they're behind the curve or not. So a lot of things that could keep investors a little bit cautious. Yet if you look at the price actions I alluded to throughout the summer and, you know, through last week, it is consistent with investors believing in a soft landing. But really what they're waiting for is, you know, sort of a sufficient kind of, you know, combination of information on rate cuts and adequate job growth to be really convinced that this soft landing will evolve into an extended expansion and certainly a position for it. Whether it happens this week, in 3 weeks, or, you know, later, that's to be determined. We think it will happen before year end because we're going to see the Fed cutting enough and the economy holding up enough to have confidence that you could get a bit of a soft patch for growth, but not necessarily, or not a recession as we move into 2025. You know, the timing of this is could be tricky, certainly with the election that could influence things and what investors want to do. But as we've learned over the past year, sentiment turns very quickly on oftentimes 1 or 2 data points, rightly or wrongly, but we've seen the market narrative shift very, very fast in different cases. It's also the case that market performance, you know, shifts very quickly with it, where, you know, in a matter of days or a few weeks, you can see returns, say, for the equity markets overall or segments of equity markets, 10% in the course of a month or a few weeks. So what you would normally get in a full year, it's happening in the course of less than a month. And for a lot of investors who have been a little bit cautious about chasing, you know, the rally, and, you know, throughout the summer, chasing some of these recoveries, they've even used the rallies to sell into strength. The pain trade for a lot of investors is that the markets actually go higher, not lower. I think the positioning data across different types of investors, whether retail or hedge funds, is now neutral to more kind of cautious or defensive. So that's the kind of the overall market backdrop. Given all these sort of uncertainties and how things could shift around, what we'd say is investors should be sort of fully invested. So don't be too cautious on taking equity risk overall or credit risk. In terms of, you know, one of our key messages has been positioned for lower rates. And this week we will officially get those lower rates, we believe, especially at the very front of the curve, not just at the back end of the curve. Given how much though the markets have moved and how much they're pricing in, there is probably more scope for disappointment if the Fed only does 25. So you could see kind of yield backing up. And if growth holds up as we expect, again, you could see yields like the 10-year yield maybe drifting a little bit higher rather than lower. So it's not a bad time to buy duration. There's probably better entry points. When you could see sort of treasury selling off on any sort of signs the Fed is not going to cut as much or growth is holding up. So there may be better entry points to sort of extend the, you know, duration of your portfolio to shift out of cash into some of these longer maturing, higher quality fixed income. On equities, you know, while I mentioned small caps rallied on Friday, I think, you know, general message would be still to kind of favor quality stocks overall. There's still a lot of uncertainty that's going on, you know, across the economy, across policy. One of the sectors that tends to have, you know, a lot of quality stocks is tech, and it remains most preferred. Last week, if we extract away from, you know, a lot of discussion about the Fed, the economic data, the other big story last week was what happened in the tech space and NVIDIA in particular. There was a conference, industry conference, where the CEO of NVIDIA kind of reiterated, you know, strong demand for the products. And there was kind of other commentary from other people in the tech sector, CEOs kind of saying the same thing, that the AI demand and demand for chips isn't abating at all. On that day, on Wednesday, NVIDIA stock went up 8%, and that was really kind of the tail wagging the dog, helping to drag up the rest of the tech sector and the markets overall. For us, it sort of reaffirms the view that our expectations for CapEx spending in AI will have an upside risk to next year. Earnings will continue to come through, and it is a quality sector. So it's kind of a lot of things from a more micro level perspective that make the tech sector, you know, relatively attractive at this point in time, despite some of the concerns there have been about AI monetization, some of the pullbacks we saw at different points in the summer. I think it's a sector that we still like going forward.
Well, Jason, thank you again for dropping by to preview expectations of the Fed meeting outcome this week, what it might mean for the economic outlook, the markets, and sharing some guidance with respect to portfolio positioning. So thank you again, Jason, for your time today, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation in just a couple of days.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.